Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tonight, we got him, Goldie and the Sulk.
This is a chemical, disgusting display.
And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers, by writers, who hate writing. And before we get going today, I wanted to just circle back and talk a little bit about last week's episode with Pete Holmes, because boy, that was great. He was so awesome. What a shot in the arm he was, really. Yeah. And Goldie, I know you felt that way too. It was like, we're busy here flapping our wings, furiously trying to fly, and you just watch Pete Holmes just soaring effortlessly. He's in such a zone comedically. It was just a joy to talk to him. But one thing I wanted to briefly mention was towards the end of the podcast, Goldie, Pete was trying to reach out to me a little bit, and you said, don't bother trying to reach out to him. He's like a Mr. Ripley. And then you pointed out as evidence of that you've been wearing glasses forever, and now suddenly I'm wearing glasses. First of all, I've been wearing glasses for 3 years, but that's okay. But
sure.
I just wanted to say, you think I'm going to Mr. Ripley you? Was that Mr. Ripley's thing? Like, he would go to Venice and say, oh, I want to be that gondolier? No, I'm going to Mr.
Part
Ripley.
Of the scam is like, who would ever believe you
right.
over me? Because in court, it's going to be your word against mine, and you're going to show up, and everyone's going to believe me. That's part of the whole Mr. Ripley gaslighting thing. I notice even Tom's wearing the glasses now. Like, I planted my flag on these glasses in what, 1997? I mean, I've been here. Where have you guys been? And now all of a sudden, everyone wants to wear these big glasses. Like I need to add a personality. I'm almost 50, or in Tom's case, 52. I need to add some personality. I will steal the one thing that's working for Goldie. I'll take the one thing from him and make it mine and leave him with nothing. And then when in court, no one will believe him. Okay.
First joke of the day.
That barely qualified.
Come on, it was good.
But so you mentioned Tom twice in that semi-rant there. And the Tom we're referring to is, we're not going to say his whole name. It's Tom G. And he's our first Patreon premium friend. He's here on the show. He's paying an undisclosed amount of money to sit here and watch us do our thing. So Tom G, welcome to A Typical Tom. Disgusting Display, and thank you.
Hello, thank you. I don't know the ground rules. Am I allowed to talk, or am I just observing?
Well, I mean, I introduced you, so I was hoping you'd say a little something.
Because I paid a lot of money for this, and but I'll try not to talk too much. But if I think of something, I did write some Johnny jokes, if I could be part of that.
Oh, good. That's terrific. Well, great. You're the Patreon premium guy. You can do whatever you want.
Well,
now,
do I have any special powers? Can I, like, command you to do things and such? Or
that's your Patreon premium tier. You can command us to do things.
Wow, okay. Awesome. Wait, hold on. I just got to get a drink. Hold on a second.
Okay. He's got his dad's glass. What is that, a can of dad's?
Is that energy drink?
It's energy drink that I guess you gave to the movie critics or the TV critics.
Oh, and you have it still?
It says, energize your Tuesdays with dads. Tuesdays on Fox.
Oh, my God. It's real.
He's holding up a can with the dads poster on it that is an actual promotional item from, I don't know, 10 years ago when
that's
it was dads.
That's awesome. And I love that the can is warped.
Oh, yes. Well, it expired in 2015, but it's still delicious.
They did better than the show. 2 years longer. Lasted 2 years longer.
All right. I'm going to be quiet as a mouse. Okay, back to the show.
So far, you've been pretty quiet. We appreciate that. Haven't been chiming in too much.
I don't have any special privileges. I just listen to you guys talk and see how it works.
This is your Patreon premium tier.
Okay, I'm not sure how many times we have to establish that.
Okay, I got it. Okay, sorry. I knew I was going to get some barbs from Goldie. It's like,
again, thank
that's
you.
That's included in the Patreon. Yeah, that's right. I'm required to, I think, 5 barbs in your direction was what we said.
Yeah, okay, awesome.
The Rickles of this podcast.
All right.
Yeah, and again, thank you for not butting in too much.
Yes.
But we wanted to, the theme of today's show, which we'll get to after Johnny Jokes, is going to be starting a new season, because that's exactly what we're doing on Family Guy right now. Mm-hmm. We've literally just started a new season, so we'll kind of talk about some of the things that writers do as they head into a new season. But on the overall podcast, I think that's kind of going to be the theme of the whole show, is just starting anew. Because Goldie, I think your kids are starting up school again, and you've noticed some interesting things about the schedule.
Well, yeah. So for the first time, my kids are now in different schools. Actually, that's not true, because it used to be nursery school and elementary, but they were both close. But my older kid got into a nice private school situation. Nice. That's great. We were very proud of her. It's a distance from my house. So anyway, school out here, first of all, starts very early in the year. Like, what is it? August 10th? So it's summer, right? Like, no one's like,
that's weird.
Oh, it's August 10th. Right. Fall has begun. The leaves are on the ground.
Yeah, right. I feel that crisp air.
Yeah. The days are getting shorter. It's like we're in the middle of summer. So already the school's starting way too early in the year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because she was at a camp and we had to pull her out a week early. Anyway.
That's insanely early.
Yeah. It's so early. Yeah, but yeah. And the whole reason is so like during the year, they take all these holidays no one else takes during days when we work, so it's incredibly inconvenient. The second thing, school out here starts at 8 a.m.
What?
Which is ridiculous.
That's crazy. So, that's upsetting.
I have to get up at 6 a.m., you know, to get everything ready, start getting both kids going, and then there's two different school situations. So why, as a country, are we starting school before 10:30 a.m. Like,
thank
this is crazy. Like, either we're number one in the world and we can take our foot off the gas a little bit and make it easy on ourselves, or you go, despite all our efforts, we're number 10 in the world and nothing matters, and let's just take our foot off the gas. But like,
yeah,
here's how school should work. So because if we start at 8, like most work starts at 9, right?
Right.
So one of the parents has to bring the kids to work. And then if both parents work, like, it's cutting it too close. So then maybe in certain situations, you hire someone to help you. Now, that person who you hire is getting up at, what, 4? And maybe they have kids. Yeah. And they have their, you know, spouse has a job where they have to be there now at 7. Like, the whole country's fucked up because of this.
Yeah.
And then we have to, then we get out early. We get out at like 2:30, which no one's out of work. That time's convenient for no one.
No one.
Then we get home. We have this big dinner that when you have kids, no one enjoys the dinner because the kids don't like the dinner.
Right. They don't like it.
You'll never going to find, if you say like, here's chicken a la king to 4 people, one person's going to like it, 2 people are going to be neutral, and one's going to hate it. And that's with every dish. So like, here's my plan. Everyone loves breakfast. You wake up, school starts at 11. Instead of a big dinner together, we all have a big breakfast together. Everyone likes eggs, waffles, pancakes, bacon, sausage, cereal.
That.
Everyone can find something they like. We're all relaxed, right?
Yes.
Yes.
You drop them to school at 11, and our work starts at what? 11:30. Great. And people can sleep in. Everyone's happier all of a sudden. Yep. They can have a snack at school. Here's the innovation. School gets out at 4:30. They serve dinner. School dinner. So you don't have to worry about this stupid fucking dinner anymore. It's ruining
nuggets.
Everyone's life. The kids, it's better for everyone to eat dinner early, health-wise. Everyone knows that at this point. Yep. You don't have to deal with the whole crap of what are we going to have to dinner? What are we going to make for dinner? Dinner's taken care of so that when you get off work and you pick your kid up at, what, 5:30 because you get off at 5, the dinner's taken care of. You're just going home and relaxing with your kids.
I like
what
your
are we
country.
Doing?
I
Start like your, everything later.
I like your America. I like your America much better.
Yes.
And by
Thank
the way,
you.
Every dinner, chicken nuggets. This is what I've learned about kids. Every kid loves chicken nuggets. They cannot stop asking for them or eating them. So chicken nuggets and maybe Friday pizza.
And like that doesn't take talent. Like I used to love to cook. Right. Like
yeah.
I used to cook fancy things for me
cook.
And my wife. The amount that life has beaten out of me where you just present, you're like, here, I worked on this. And some kid is like, I don't like it. And it's like, you don't know anything. You know nothing about food.
Tom G, any Patreon premium fan, Tom G,
you
any
have
funny
a very
stories?
Good kid. I like your kid character. You should do that kid more.
I'm not going to eat it. I want mac and cheese. Well, let your fucking school make mac and cheese, because you know what's easy to make a thousand portions of and really cheap? Mac and cheese. And
Chicken
let the
nuggets.
People, sure, and let the teachers who are being paid, like, let them feed it to them and deal with the blowback.
Yep, I agree.
I've given them a healthy breakfast.
I think the kids would like that, too. I think they think it'd be cool to have dinner at the school.
Yeah,
I
bet
idea.
They would. Any stories about taking your kids to school, Tom G? Patreon premium, yeah. Tom G?
No, not really. You can cut that part out. No, you know, the nice thing is our elementary school was close to our house, so every day somebody would forget something, and it was easy to turn around and get it again, but yeah.
And there's you putting the items in the bike basket and just riding back to school. A chicken in your front basket.
Yeah.
Just for the listeners, I mean, this us making money through Patreon comes at kind of a cost to you. And there's barb number two.
Barb
my contractually two. Obligated five barbs.
Five Barbaras coming.
You're barbing
your way.
Me and I'm loving it.
Nice.
Well, so school's a nightmare. But one thing that's great about this time of year, Goldie, and we talk about this every year, is a little show on HBO called Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks on HBO. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's a show that they've been doing for, I would say, 15 years at least, where they have HBO documentary crews have full access to one team's mini camp building up to the season. And they do a great job of filming everything that you never get to see about a football team and splicing it all together with great music, fantastic narration. So this year they're doing the Detroit Lions. And Goldie, we both watched episode one, and I think we're debating season tickets. Is that right?
I want to become, I think I'm trying to come up with the right term for it. Is it half coastal? Because if we were to get a place in Detroit, right. Demi-coastal, semi-coastal.
Yeah, I like it, I like semi-coastal, it. I like that.
Semi-coastal. Because if we got a place in Detroit, which supposedly is pretty cheap, we could go to these games. I actually have the thought every year, and you're going to think I'm doing a bit. I assure you I'm not.
Okay.
When I see the Hard Knocks opening credits, I say to myself audibly, I did it. I live to see another Hard Knocks every year when it comes on. And for the past few years,
great.
It is not, it's been getting worse and worse. And
yes.
And what they do is they try to find someone in the camp who maybe like thinks the earth is flat, is very quirky or something.
Right.
Right.
Writes poetry. And then they try to build it up like this person might make the team. You know, they have no shot of making the team. They create schmuck bait, fake drama.
Yep.
This year, no need, because the head coach of the Detroit Lions just came out absolutely firing.
Dan Campbell.
One of the greatest, most inspirational locker room speeches I ever heard.
And I saw that clip.
One of the hilarious things is a speech like that is typically the climax of the sports movie in Act 3 before the team goes out and wins.
Right.
But several times a day, they're giving that speech. At the beginning of training camp, nothing's happening, nothing is, and they're keeping the intensity up at such a fever pitch, it's totally unsustainable.
Yeah.
But I want to read a quote
that
he said, this is in his opening remarks. He started off very kind of like gruff. He's like, here are the team rules. And you're like, oh, there's going to be a bunch of team rules. No,
three.
Team rules are like, don't be late, make weight, respect the game. That's it.
Yeah.
So you're like, this is a different kind of coach.
Yeah.
Wait a second. This isn't the coach
I'm
used to.
This isn't my father's coach.
Then he goes into the effort And one of the lines he builds to is he says, "It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes. I will beat your ass."
I love that.
So, what?
Already. And then he makes this incredibly strained metaphor comparing the National Football League to the ocean, where certain teams never get off the sand.
Yep.
There are good teams in the shallow water. And then he says what he wants to do is enter the shallow water, drag the good teams out to the deep water, and drown them.
Yeah, that was exactly right. I don't know if Danny has goosebumps about that.
But it also, like,
I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
The metaphor breaks out so quickly because you're like, well, why don't you go from land, drag them out of the water, and beat them to death on land?
Right, where it's
or
safer.
Why don't you just drown them in the shallow water?
Yeah.
Like, what difference does it make where you beat them to death or drown them or kill them?
And clearly there's no lifeguard at this beach. Where all these teams are just dragging each other around into the shallow and
defunded.
The deep and maybe drowning each other.
But then, I mean, do you want to talk about the
Asa all.
Hutchinson dance?
Oh, well, Aiden.
Aiden, thank you.
No, there was a guy who danced. That wasn't Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson sang Michael Jackson.
But
which,
he danced. I mean, he danced as
yes,
well.
Yes, that was so great. Oh, yeah. So Aiden Hutchinson is their first round pick. He was the second pick overall in this year's draft. Uh-huh. He went to Michigan. He's from a football family. He's one of those like J.J. Watt, kind of like 6'6", like stunning white guy, football player guys. Yeah. So one of the things they do each year is if you're a rookie, they make you get up in front of the entire team and do a little talent show. And it just kind of breaks the ice and whatever. You have to get up there. You have to say when you were drafted. You have to say how much your first contract is worth, and his is worth a lot. So when he said, like, my signing bonus was $22 million, everyone was like, whoa. But so he gets up there, and they start playing the music for Billie Jean, and I'm thinking,
I have to stop.
Go ahead.
No. They don't start playing the music to Billie Jean.
Yeah.
It's a cappella.
Oh, that's even better. You're right.
Yeah, and
way more impressive.
And he screws it up.
The first line, yes.
And so it's like in a movie when the microphone feeds back, and you say to yourself, uh-oh. This microphone might not work. This performance might not go off.
Right.
Wow.
And then.
Then. Go ahead. It was glorious.
Magic.
It was glorious.
I get goosebumps.
I mean, I'll play it again.
Yeah, I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
I mean, everyone should just go on to YouTube and look at.
Yeah.
Aiden Hutchinson, Billie Jean.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was.
It might be better than Michael Jackson.
I know.
Wow.
I literally watched him perform it. And you, first of all, I love how much everyone who's still like 25 and younger knows every word to Billie Jean.
Yeah.
I love that. Like it's still a song that just everybody knows. And of course, in an NFL locker room, you've got like probably 75-80% African Americans in there, and they are loving it. And they're looking at this white kid up there singing it, and he's fucking nailing it. We texted each other when we were both watching that was just, I almost cried watching him
iconic.
Do it.
Iconic.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
So Hard Knocks, the moral of the story is Hard Knocks is absolutely worth watching this year on the theme of things starting up, football starting up. It gets everybody excited. And this season's Hard Knocks with the Detroit Lions, who are perennial cellar dwellers in the NFL.
Yeah.
I love saying cellar dwellers. Cellar dwellers. But we're rooting for
them. Do it as a Dick Van Dyke.
These guys are cellar dwellers. They're down there sweeping out the basement. Dick Van Dyke's still alive, by the way. Crazy.
I know.
He beat Bill Russell. I don't know how that happened. But Hard Knocks is exquisite. The coach is excellent. He's doing the drills, the up downs out there with the team, which is basically like when you drop down and do a push up and pop back up. He's doing them. He looks like he could play. He's like,
well, he did.
Well, I know he did, but he looks like he could play right now.
Wow.
Anyway,
is the running back Jamal Williams? Is that his name?
I believe it is. He gave a great speech too.
That he at the end of a crappy practice gave a speech where he started crying.
Yes, mm-hmm. I saw this clip.
I'm saying it on here so it's on the record. He needs to speak at my funeral.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I love that. But no time soon, hopefully. No time soon.
No, but you never know.
I'm actually a super patron of Hard Knocks. I've seen the whole series, but I signed a non-disclosure. So, but keep watching, guys. It's amazing.
Oh, and that's Tom G, our Patreon premium friend, who's not chiming in a lot today. But yeah, Hard Knocks is exquisite. It sounds like your kid's school schedule is a nightmare, but I like what you've figured out. And we're going to talk later on in our theme about Family Guy starting up again. I'll just throw out one short little thing. I'm here enjoying the last few days in paradise back east before I have to get dragged back to hell in L.A. Ugh. So I've been doing a lot with my daughter, you know, because I think she knows that I'm getting ready to go away for a few weeks. And so she's saying, like, Dada, do you want to play with me a lot? Because she knows that she's got me by the balls now. Yeah. So I go and I play with her. And the other day we're playing this game that she calls Have a Job. This game's called Have a Job. And we go, we're up in the attic. And she's like, okay, Dada, you can be first. You have a job. What job do you want to have? And I'm thinking, like, well, what does a kid find interesting? I'm like, I'll be a doctor. She's like, no, Dada, just do your job. And I'm like, I'm like, okay. And she's like, I'm going to go shopping with my credit card. And she set me up with a fake, like, writer's pad and a pen. And here's the thing. We say at the opening of this show every week, we're writers who hate writing.
Yes.
I hated fake writing for 3 minutes. I had to sit there and just pretend to be writing. And I was already, by the end of it, I was like, this sucks. All right, come on, your turn for a job.
I was going to say, when she said, do your job, did you then assign Tal to do some writing and then sit back and wait for it to happen?
Hey, we're in another room, pal. That doesn't mean we're not writing. But yes, I like that joke.
Did he say, hang on, I have a standard and practices meeting. So everyone else do writing.
Oh, wait, that's right. Funny.
Yeah, and then I float with my hands behind my head like Ferris Bueller on the pool.
Yes.
Pool
yeah.
You know, can I just say, I don't hate writing. What I hate is when people read what you wrote and they don't like it.
Well, it's that, like, sucks.
And then it's like, oh, well, I love the writing part. It's like, this is great. And then someone else reads it, it's like, oh, it's not so great.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Okay, well, something, unfortunately, that we can't postpone, we haven't had to do it for almost 2 weeks, it's time for Johnny Jokes.
From Hollywood, with an extra Top G Patreon edition, here's Johnny's.
Yeah, great intro.
That was awesome.
Great intro. And
all right.
We do have.
Can I go first?
Well, Tom, oh, hang on. Hold your horses there for a minute. Tom G, our super Patreon premium level fan.
I paid a lot of money to be on there.
A lot of money to tell his Johnny jokes. And yes, Tom G, you can go first.
Donald Trump, he had a wild week. It was revealed earlier this week that while in the White House, Donald Trump would tear up classified documents and throw the pieces of paper into the toilet. Yeah. The ex-president explained he was just a little mixed up at the time, and whatever you do, Don't look in the wastebasket.
Excellent.
Did you hear this one? A California man caught his wife on videotape adding Drano to his glass of lemonade. Yeah. Apparently he asked for an Arnold Palmer. She gave him a Jeffrey Dahmer.
These are great.
Mike Connors is here tonight, the star of Mannix. Can I say what network he's on? Can I mention the network? Can I say what? You know what? I'm just going to say it. CBS. Oh. Johnny used to do that. He'd be a little devilish.
I know. Can I mention the other network?
Yeah, stick it to the bus. On a sad note, this...
Wait, so that was the joke? The guy from Mannix?
No,
he just likes
to throw that in between.
Joke number three, Goldie.
It's not called Johnny Jokes and Johnny Aside.
Barb three.
Wow. Ouch. Well, on a sad note, David McCullough.
A side note or a sad note?
a little bit of both. Hey, I didn't heckle you during your whatever the breakfast thing was. So shut up.
Well, I'm going to pay more than you, and now I'm the Patreon, and you're the podcaster.
Very meta.
Oh, my God. Okay, David McCullough, the best-selling author and voice behind countless Ken Burns documentaries, died this week.
He gone!
On his deathbed, he was surrounded by sappy violin music and lots of grainy photos of himself.
Ken Burns.
Very nice.
And finally, media mogul Rupert Murdoch, 91, and model Jerry Hall, 66, finalized their divorce this week. Yeah. Hall, the mother of four of Mick Jagger's children, said she didn't realize that when she married Rupert, she'd be going from Jumping Jack Flash to lots of gas, gas, gas.
I love the journey. Who's here? Who else is here?
Stick around. We've got Thomas Anthony Harris. He wrote the book, I'm Okay, You're Okay. Or as we say around here, I'm okay, Ed's a little tipsy.
A bumper crop, my friend.
That was great.
That was great.
That was great. Character actor Chuck McCann will be with us. Okay, here we go. Time for my less funny. Those were great, Tom G.
Thank you. You're
more than a fan. Okay. Well, flash flooding has become a major problem across the United States, with Denver receiving 4 inches of rain in under 10 minutes. Yeah. Boy, that is dangerous. 4 inches in under 10 minutes, by the way, was the cause of my last divorce. Hey, everyone. Kind of a sex
joke.
Hey,
everyone.
All right.
Kind of.
Kind of, for those who understood it. Elon Musk has invested over $8 billion in a company of his that is attempting to end traffic. Yeah. Experts say it may have been a waste of money, as all they've come up with in the last 12 months is, move, you bum. A good way to get rid of traffic. Move, you bum. Here we go. And boy, it never ends. Health officials believe now that the polio virus is circulating around the New York City area. Yeah. Particularly on the FDR. And
move,
finally,
you bums.
Move, you bums. I don't want to get polio, you bum. And finally, some sad news.
That's great.
Finally, some sad news. Singer Olivia Newton-John has passed away at the age of 73.
He gone!
Yeah.
She gone.
The pop icon was diagnosed with cancer at her last physical. And I'd like to say, I'd like to add, may she rest in Greece. I will say, our friend Gary Jannetty sent me rest in Greece and said he was too scared to use it on Instagram, and I said I would gladly use it here. So thank you, Gary Jannetty.
Thank you, Gary.
And no Anne Heche jokes. Wow.
No, thank God. Oh. All right, Johnny, number
All
three.
All right, here we go. Comedian Dane Cook finally proposed to his girlfriend, Kelsey, who is 26 years younger than he is. Yeah. Dane got down on one knee, then rolled over in pain because he hit one of her Legos.
I don't subscribe to the Dane Cook news. That's all news to me.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, in the wake of the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade, several new states have banned abortion. And women, if you're thinking about having an abortion, don't. Dane Cook will marry your baby.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my God. Your baby.
I love it.
Together. The first together. Weaker joke was really just the second, yeah, just, second just, one that yeah, I had to
that's,
lock on.
That's a first down. That's a first
yeah,
down.
That's right. What I wanted to do there. Okay. Former President Donald Trump is irate that the FBI broke in and raided his Florida home. In Trump's defense, he would have gladly shown them everything if they had simply identified themselves as Russian agents. But the FBI, however, drew a line. They didn't search Melania's bedroom because it's in New York City. And finally,
yes,
there's a new book out about how to have bad sex.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah. And men all over the country are tearing off the cover, reading the last page, then falling asleep.
That's great stuff there. Yeah, it's funny, Goldie, because you've done this a few times now, and I feel like maybe as writers, we should just briefly highlight it. So Goldie will sometimes take thematic, you know, jokes and link them by theme, using the same story to do two jokes in a row or three jokes in a row. And in writing, you kind of, we call that a callback. And usually there's a little bit of time in between them. But when you're doing it in a monologue form, and Johnny used to do this too, it's just a great way to, as you said, Goldie, the first joke was merely the jab on your way in to release the second joke. And it really works on audiences. They love it when they get, you know, to giggle about a story two or three times in a row.
But yeah. It also rewards laziness in a great way because you go, look, I have three or four jokes about this. I know one is great, but I know it'll seem greater. And I also get to use one of these worse ones. Like, if right. I could somehow call back a previous barb, I would have another barb.
Yeah. Right.
Toward my five count.
Yeah, yes. You're three now.
Sure, and I'm stuck on three. A lot of people are thinking at this point. It's like, no, wow, no. He's been on three a while.
No.
But it's a great way to sort of, you know, use all parts of the buffalo.
Yes. Have you guys discussed nice. Nakamura on the show? Do you know that story?
No,
but
go
please
ahead.
Do. I know. Yeah,
it's a great story.
And Nakamura, I'll follow it with our version of this from the Cleveland show.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll just do a fast version. I think it was from the Bob Newhart show where they were using the word Nakamura as a callback, and the first one didn't get a laugh, and there were like six more after that, and none of them were getting laughs.
Oh,
so
no.
The whole scene bombed, the whole act bombed.
Yeah.
So like when you start doing a callback, someone might say, well, watch out for the Nakamuras.
Oh, yes. Nice. Yeah. Thank you.
It's a writer's room term. But so there was an episode of the Cleveland show where a riverboat casino came to town. And then Cleveland rapidly lost all his money at the Riverboat Casino and had to go to work in the casino. And his job was, you know how sometimes in bars you go into the men's bathroom in the urinal and it's full of ice?
Yes.
So his job was to empty the urine ice.
Oh, God.
And throw it over the overboard. And like the whole thing, you know, it's like, oh, my God, it's melted on my arms as I'm running to dump it. I've got melted urine ice. And anyway, throughout the script, there may have been 12 references to urine ice. The first one gets nothing.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm sitting there just flipping ahead going, oh, my God, urine ice. And by the end, the last one, like that, there was a palpable anger from the executives in the room that we had dared. And it was maybe the greatest disparity I've ever had in my career between what I thought was going to happen and what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And by the end, we were shell-shocked.
Yeah. We had the same thing on Family Guy at a table read where we were doing an episode where Brian and Stewie get shrunk to microscopic size. And it turned out to be a very good episode, but...
Oh, yeah,
so,
the old Osmosis Jones.
Exactly.
We call it.
So they were, like, running through the carpet and with all the little microbial sort of creatures, the dust mites and things
yeah.
that, what are they called, like tardigrades or that live in that microscopic world. And so we had a plucky cast of characters to play these microscopic creatures. And I was playing one, and mine was like the Catskills comedian kind of character who was always trying to. And so literally when I delivered my first joke, it was just absolute silence. And I knew, like you did, that not only were there several to come, but I had to say them all. So literally by the time I was on my third or fourth one, the normally completely professional and stoic Rich Appel was crying, laughing, could not catch his breath to read the stage directions. And first of all, so that's a Nakamura. And that also plugs into something we talk about on this show a lot, which is there's nothing better than watching your close friends just fry in their own shit. Like, there's something so wonderful about, like, if I was watching Viner in that situation, I would have been laughing the same way.
Right.
But well, because as an actor, you go, the only hope this has, and it is a poor hope, and it'll make it worse, is throwing everything at it.
Yes. Right. And so then it makes it worse.
Yeah.
Because it's clear you're sweatily trying as hard as you can. And just, I'll never forget, like, I could see out of the corner of my eye Rich convulsing laughing. I've never seen him laugh so hard. And it was just at my abject failure. That was very
funny. I got a story about getting no laughs.
Yes. Okay. So, really?
So Max and I were working on the show called The New Show in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
And there were all these technical problems. So a sketch we wrote was being shown to the audience at like 2 in the morning. And at that point, there were only like 8 people in the audience. So it starts, it's not getting any laughs. I know where the next laugh is. So right before it comes, I drop my pants in front of the audience. It gets a huge laugh to the point where all the actors stopped to see what they were laughing at.
You really dropped your pants?
Yeah, sure.
Were you wearing boxers with hearts on them?
Yes, I was wearing comedy boxers. Yeah, it was the 80s. You could do stuff like that.
That's great.
Right.
I did that. That's great. Unintended.
You did.
But it was great.
It worked. But the only drawback was suddenly all the actors, Dave Thomas and Catherine O'Hara, and everyone just sort of stopped like, what are people laughing at?
Yeah, no, I've noticed that actors don't...
Can't be the show.
I know, right? Actors tend not to like when you upstage them.
Yeah.
They don't enjoy you getting the laugh and not them. But yes, okay, so that's... We now know Nakamura, so we're learning more terms. And
yes.
Goldie, again, great runs there in your Johnny jokes. I always appreciate the effort and care in that kind of stuff. And as you say, laziness.
Yep.
But so now we're going to get into the theme of today's show, and we've kind of been touching on it up to this point, but we're starting a new season of Family Guy. So we thought we would kind of talk about some of the things that writers and writing staffs do as you're preparing to enter a season. And we can talk about some
of the
different...
A new season. And I just wanted to point out, you need to tell me, because I've almost never worked on a show that had a second season. So I've never had to do it, because every show I've been on has been canceled, or my own shows, they've been canceled instantly. So when you proposed this topic, I was like, oh, good, I'm going to learn something. Because I can't get a show to a second season.
Well, then, Goldie, I will just say that you have good instincts, because point number one that I was going to talk about is we happen to be blessed with a large, very funny staff. Family Guy's obviously been on the air now for 20 plus years, so we've had a little experience with this. But one of the great things about having a large, talented staff with people like Goldie and Megan and Artie and Mike D and Travis and the whole gang, Callahan, they're all great. They will, in advance of the season, when they know the season is approaching, they start to send me and Rich story ideas for the upcoming season. And you have no idea what a great move that is. It's such a relief to know that A, people are thinking about the show, and B, they're taking their jobs seriously, and C, they're very funny people who come up with funny ideas. And in fact, Goldie, the idea that I think you and Travis came up with together, because you're surf buddies, is a great show idea, and I think we're absolutely going to do it. So
I can't wait.
Cool.
And also, I intend to write off like 40 grand worth of surf vacations.
Research.
If it gets picked up, because right. My accountant will be like, yeah, you had to research surfing for
so
it.
Awesome.
Oh, I did. I needed a new board desperately to know how Peter would feel when he bought a new board.
Yes.
Well, it's funny, because we've had Mike Scully on this show, great showrunner and friend Mike Scully. And his brother, Brian Scully, who's also a fantastic and funny guy and worked on Family Guy for many years and The Simpsons, he was there. He used to say that when he went on vacation anywhere, Paris, London, you know, Hawaii, he would bring his laptop and open up a file and just say, exterior, Paris, day, and then just close his computer, because then he could write off the entire trip as a writing expense. He had that little vacation hack.
Wow. If there's any IRS agents listening,
that's right.
You've just given him up.
So that's Brian Scully in West Adams, Massachusetts.
Yeah, social security number.
Living high off the hog. But so, no, to get back to the point, a big part of going into a new season of a show is coming in ready with some ideas. It shows the showrunners that you're thinking of the show. It shows that you're taking the job seriously and you're actually really helping out. And so now on Family Guy, it's a unicorn. It's a different kind of show. We come back year after year, so we're very thankful for that. But on a new show, I'm wondering, Goldie, because you talked about it, that's more... You've had a lot of experience starting up a new show. You've started up two of your own. You were on Dad's season one, you know. So what are some of the things that you would think of before you would come into a new show?
Well, increasingly, like I felt like it wasn't this way when we started out, but maybe it was because I started out in animation. It's trying to present the executives with character arcs that could evolve over the course of a season that would seem satisfying. Like, these two characters begin at odds, they then begin a romance, then the romance gets blown up by something, and in the end they realize that even though they're right for each other, they can't be with each other. Something like that. That you just want to get these broad ideas. Like on Making History, it was that Yasser Lester's character, this history professor, sort of, you know, at the beginning doesn't want to mess with stuff, and then at the end becomes so inflamed and corrupted that we were even going to go, we had this whole plot that he was going to cover his tracks for all the crime he was doing. He was going to bury 10 skeletons from the present in John Hancock's yard and then uncover them and say John Hancock was America's first serial killer and then use that to further his history career. But then this journalist played by Natalie Morales, who we established as kind of catching on to him, we were going to have her then kind of know this was happening and work to expose him as America's first time traveler. And then he was going to systematically in this trial sleep with the judge, every member of the jury, every member of the defense. He was going to sleep with everyone involved with the trial. And he's like, I'm just going to sex my way out of this. Like, it's going to become so incredibly corrupted. So it's stuff like that that you think, you know, we want to build in rather than flying blind episode to episode. Like, oh, it might be good if they encounter Nikola Tesla in this episode. And then that, like, something that's driving people to come back the next week, because it's not just a funny show, but they're invested in something that's happening with the characters. And to be honest, when you start dealing with actors of a pretty high caliber who you're hoping to get with your show, the thing that allows you to get them is to say, hey, you're not just going to be playing this one thing every week, because what we see you doing is evolving in this way, is getting in this romance, is becoming corrupt, or is, if you're corrupt, turning your back on your family and going out on your own, because their brains are wired differently than ours and they want different stuff that we just kind of see like, hey, the real money's here is if, you know, if we do Bob Hart's Abishola, no one knows we're on. We do the same thing every week. Right. And then they give us a private jet at 100. Like, they don't see it that way. Yeah. Like, they want to do stuff.
Yeah. Right. And so I think a way of condensing that thought is it's good at the start of something. That's when you want to air out the big ideas. Like, that's when you want to say, like, this is where I see this new show going. And these are the characters who I think should interact most and sort of become, you know, like, you're lucky enough to get sort of a Brian and Stewie kind of, you know, buddy thing that lasts for years. You kind of, you want to come in early and start to establish that stuff. And also, I will add, much like prison, when you come into a new writer's room, you want to hit the biggest guy in the mouth right away. That's a very important thing for writer's room. Just establish your dominance. Okay. But seriously,
get crushed and humiliated early, as you realize this veteran person knows a lot more than you and will jujitsu you with twice the force of what you throw at them, and then you'll quickly and quietly be fired later.
Jewish jitsu.
Remember on Dad's, I punched that PA in the stomach. I had that thing all set up with that guy.
Silvio.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right. Not for real. Let's clarify.
No, yeah. That's not for real. But so Silvio is, he's a great guy. And he was a PA on Dad's. And
big
but he's,
CrossFit guy.
He's huge. He's like yes. He's like a very friendly Hulk. You know, he's just like muscular as all hell. And so Tom used to have a bit with him where he would pretend to like chew Silvio out about some mistake he had made with the lunch order, and then pretend to punch him and punch him out. It was very like Tony Soprano. It was very funny.
But it showed people who was boss.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Tom, like, what do they do on The Simpsons? How do they approach a new season?
It's the same as Family Guy. Yeah, pretty much. You always want to hear people having stories. Yeah.
But do you come in?
People come in with first drafts early on, and you're just working on the first drafts right away.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. That's a little different than what we do. And I would say that whether you're on a show like Simpsons that's been on for 30 plus years or a show that's just starting, if they're
comedy, he's written for Seinfeld. What are we doing talking? How do they do it on Seinfeld?
And one thing about Seinfeld, they never plotted out. It was always just about how to make this episode funny. There was never like an arc.
No.
Were you there when like George got engaged and they were playing out with Susan? So, I mean, was that something that just popped up in an episode and it's like, we'll just have him get engaged. And then they said, oh, this works. He's great engaged and funny.
I think so. And then, you know, a lot of it too depends on like you see what actors work off well each other and stuff. And, you know, like sometimes at the start of a season, you'll think, oh, we're going to do something with these two people. And then it's like, oh, that's not really working out so well, but something else is working out.
Yeah.
You know, you got to... You can't stay too glued to a big arc, you know. You got to sort of be flexible.
Yeah.
You know, and that can be frustrating, you know. It's like where the network's like, but we need this to happen. It's like, well, it's not working out.
It's sort of harder now because of the way mini rooms have evolved and things are written, you know, on a lot of shows, particularly single cams, they're now written so far in advance. And then they're produced and the writers are no longer around and you're kind of stuck with what you got.
Yeah, no, that's bad if you write like the first 8 episodes before shooting anything.
Right.
Because if by episode 3 the stuff isn't working, you kind of want to see how stuff's going to work out.
Yeah,
the whole show is a Nakamura at that point.
Yeah. That's right. Each episode is furthering the Nakamura. But Tom, since we're talking about Seinfeld, and it sounds like you were there at this time, there's an episode that Goldie and I would say refer to maybe like once every few couple of months, which is the great episode where George pretends that he has a beach house. Were you there for that one where he drives
the Hamptons?
He drives Susan's parents as far
and
as
they
you,
know he doesn't have one.
Right.
But he knows he doesn't have one. Right. But neither party, you know, confronts the other.
Right.
Yeah, do you remember anything about that episode? Like, do you remember
that's the one with Shrinkage, right? The Shrinkage was a
No,
big
that's
thing
different. About. Shrinkage. Oh. Shrinkage was just a weekend in the Hamptons with the Tomatoes
Yeah, no, I don't think I know the Hamptons one.
Because you, Alec, you said, oh, we refer to it every few months. I think this episode has become a profound metaphor for America, and I refer to it weekly almost,
yes.
In that, like, we all know Donald Trump is insane and stupid and corrupt. And like, he knows it and everyone knows it. And it's like, we'll make him president. It's like, okay, great. And it's like, we'll send the FBI in his house. Good. Go ahead. See what happens. Okay. Yeah. We will. Yeah. We'll impeach him a second time. Fine. We'll storm the Capitol. I'm glad you did. Now we'll prosecute you for that. Okay, good. Go ahead. I mean, we're all like in this car together going nowhere,
wow,
driving each other insane. It's like, to me, it's become like a perfect piece of art about modern life.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, yeah, everybody's calling each other's bluff and it doesn't matter is the thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened. George just drove them literally to the end of the earth. And he drove them to the tip of Long Island and they were walking on the beach.
Although it's one of those things, it lives in my mind. And I saw this with the Cheers Cliff Goes on Jeopardy episode as well. Like, it had become in my mind so amazing. And I was like, they hit every beat. And then you go back and watch and you go, Cliff was only on Jeopardy like one scene. And there were only a couple questions. Like, I had remembered in my mind, like, and then there were all these specific questions only Cliff would know. Like,
right.
The categories were mailmen and their mothers and barflies and whatever. And it's like, no, you filled that in like that. Not that much happened. And the same with George's beach house, I feel like they were only in the car two or three quick scenes.
Right, right.
But I had built it up like it was an Edward Albee play taking place in this car. But I think back to like a new season a little bit that, you know, this time off that you have, if you're lucky enough to have it, knowing you have a job when you come back. I mean, jot down five things that are stories. Just don't ever come in assuming someone else is going to do everything. Although, you know, the show ideally does live in one person's head and they have a completist view of what should happen. Like, that's always the best, to work with those people and to help them along the way. But you should just treat it like they might call you to the witness stand.
Yes.
And ask you for stuff, because it's very transparent when someone is thinking of ideas in the moment and passing them off as previously thought of ideas. Yeah.
Yes. I remember.
And they're like, you trying to Kaiser Soze stuff in the room. Like, there's a poster of someone sailing and they're like, they could get in the boat.
That happens a lot. I've done that before.
I've done it as well.
We used to, the Family Guy story pitching process at the beginning of the season used to be different. It used to be more what you kind of were just referring to, of literally brought to the witness stand, where when we came in for the first few days or week or whatever, we would go from writer to writer and they would pitch their story ideas, you know, and some people had them very fleshed out. Other people had like great one-liners, and there was everything in between, but there was the sense of like, I'm getting ready for my talent show.
Mm-hmm. Talk about Brian Scully, the very memorable one of Peter gets a harmonica stuffed up his ass.
Yeah, that's right.
And we did that. Every time he farts, he's playing the harmonica.
Yes. Oh, Brian Scully, known IRS cheat, came up with that great idea. No, there have been, and it's interesting because I think back to back when Seth was still on the show.
Seth?
Yeah, and he was still very involved and every story that was pitched and every line that was written, we used to go to his house, and this was actually his old house, so this is now more than 10 years ago, and we would pitch to him there.
Yeah.
And there's nothing he liked more than 20 people using his bathroom.
Right.
that may be why he moved.
That's right. He moved instantly after that. But I remember, because I feel like if I'm being honest with myself as a writer, I definitely, my strength lies more in like quick puns and little lines here and there, as opposed to saying like, here's the three acts, you know,
right,
fully fleshed out. Like, I'm just not as good at that. Read lazy. So,
well, you're naked. You're so exposed when you're doing that, because
you
almost know from the instant you say the first thing. I've never seen anyone buy it back after the first part of the story didn't work. And it's like, but then in act two,
and everyone's like, oh, and,
right. But it's like, having said the first thing, if you have more, it's almost impossible to stop yourself.
Right.
Do you guys have to take network notes at this point? Do you have to?
No, well, I mean, we
get stories approved or anything?
Very occasionally. No, we don't have to run stories by anyone. What the level of notes that we get occasionally, and I will say they're great about this, the network and the studio, is when they see the screenings, the animatics and the colors, they will then write us an email and say, hey, I thought maybe this didn't work, or I loved this. But honestly, 90% of the time, the emails we get are great episode, no notes, which is...
Yeah, that's good. Because then that's a problem with a first season show, like Goldie. It's like you got all the network guys,
yes,
all over you.
Oh my God, yes. And that's when they really want to weigh in and change things. But so to go back to this pitch meeting at Seth's house, there was one year where I had come up with this story and I was like, this is a good story. And like, I actually kind of, you know, put more work into it, fleshed it all out for, you know, wasn't going to do any cute little tricks or puns when I was pitching it, just going to pitch this straight story. And I remember I'm pitching this story, and I believe it's that Stewie, the story basically in a one-liner was Stewie finally makes a best friend. And so I'm pitching this out, and it actually, the story has a little heart, as Danny Smith says, you know, if you got that heart in your hand, don't be afraid to squeeze it. So I'm pitching, you know, acts one, two, three, and I can't see Seth because of where he's sitting for whatever reason, but I can see some of the other writers, and I will point out Steve Callahan, who always supported this idea. And like, Steve was almost crying as I was pitching this story idea. And then the only time I did see Seth is when I finished Act Two and was just about to start Act Three. He got up and went to the bathroom.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So you have to be prepared for even when you think something's great, that the person who's your boss is not always going to agree with you. And you just have to be okay with that. Like, yeah. You can't get in your own way for the rest of the season because you feel like, oh, I got fucked on that one story.
The problem as a showrunner is you don't want to discourage people that early in the season. Mm. But on the other hand, you don't want to waste time. And I find that, like, as society has gotten more to the point where everyone feels they have to be supportive and empathetic all the time, which is ultimately a good thing. But it means that you have to sort of pretend to be more into things that you know aren't going to work. And again, Costanza's Beach House, like, you're going, great, so then what would happen? And you're trying to encourage, maybe someone could fix this thing on the fly and make it something you like.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult.
One time, Max and I were pitching a movie, and during the pitch, the woman listening to it lost her contact lens. And she's like, oh, but keep talking. So we're pitching, and she's all on her...
on her all fours on the carpet.
Yeah. Yeah. And that movie was E.T.
had an executive in what was clearly like 50% of the way through the pitch just go, okay, that's great. We love it.
We love it.
Thank you so much. And it was like, I just said Act Two. Yeah. We all know this.
One time we were pitching to an actor, and there's a knock on the door, and it was his personal jeweler. And so while he was hearing our pitch, he was also looking at watches and necklaces.
Was it Neil Lane? Was he on The Bachelor? What the hell's going on?
That pitch did not go well.
That movie became Star Wars. But so, Goldie, to go back to your point, and I think this is hopefully a helpful thing for writers if they're new or if they're starting on a show. So you can help your showrunner by reading the room. So if you're pitching if you brought in pitches and you're standing up and pitching them, you can usually tell if you're reading the room right away whether people like it or they don't like it. And if they don't like it, that's a good opportunity for you to be self-deprecating and get out of it with like a shitting on yourself with a little joke and moving on.
How do you
like
do that?
That what we're going to say, Jason?
Well, how do you do that? Do you just say, I can see it's not going well?
Well, yeah, you can be, and listen, there are many writers on Family Guy. We have so many writers and they've all mastered this art of self-deprecation.
I mean, it's a good question. When you know, but I'll say you could save yourself some of the trouble, especially today, as opposed to 20 years ago when you couldn't do this. It's like, I texted you, I think, the briefest version of the serving story. Like, you can beta test your idea. No one's going to be mad to get a text saying like, hey, I have a story area around the idea.
Or Telegram.
What's that?
Yeah, Telegram.
Thank you. I have a story area in the idea of the family goes to the Empire State Building and gets stuck on the top floor. Would you like to hear more, yes or no?
Yeah. Y or N. But yeah. Yes. And JC, to answer that question, in person, if you're doing something and you're pitching a story idea and you notice that it's not going well, there's always, you know, if you're at the end of Act One and you have two more acts to go, you could say, and there are two more acts, which I will save for my own personal dream journal and move on to the next idea. Like, there's just always a way to kind of step out of your own shit while, taking the hit a little bit, but not as much as you would if you sat there for three acts and made everybody kind of sweat it out with your idea that was subpar. But the overarching theme here clearly is come in with something when you're starting a new season. Come in with multiple things. Come in with ideas for story arcs, for individual episodes, even for funny things that you think a character could be doing, even if they're like kind of individual jokes that could be peppered throughout any episode.
Point I wanted to like underline a little bit is the ideas don't all have to be earth-changing for the show. They can be smaller little ideas, you know, they redo the cabinets in the kitchen and the contractor's a funny character who it turns out, you know, knew the mom from back in high school. Like, it could be a B story. Like, those all, everything's useful, right?
Yes.
You know, so also think in terms of, you know, if you're having trouble coming up with stuff, go through the cast in your head and go, what would be interesting if it happened to this person? How would it affect this person? Or What are just small things that could happen to one person that provide actable moments and story grift? And if you, not grift, story stuff.
Yeah.
And if you can find those, like also think in your head, like try to picture like what would be an interesting guest star coming in and say, you know, this is an opportunity for us to get someone like this actor or actress everyone likes to come in and do this. And it's a way of, you know, make people just see it a little bit.
Totally. And I think to Tom's point earlier, where you said when you came in at the beginning of a new season and you like to hear each other's stories, right? Who did something funny over the break? Like what funny thing happened to this person? That is also very important. It's important to come in and establish with your room that we can all laugh. We're making each other laugh. So even if you come in on day one and you're making people laugh with a story about your personal life, or, you know, something that occurred to you that doesn't necessarily apply to the show, it's all good to get started. You know,
and I'll say, I'm going to take shit for this because of our attitude toward Finchy, whatever. Just don't be afraid to make stuff up. Just say it happened to you. If it happened to your brother or your sister, whatever, just
no, that's
it.
Good. Yeah, in a pitch, if you say, this really happened to me.
Right. Well, yeah, that always makes it funnier.
Yeah.
All right, so those are a few things. Can we think of anything else about starting a new season that could be helpful or in any way interesting to our friends?
I would just say if you're going to do some major change in your appearance or something, don't do it that day because everything, there's so much new. You'll get more attention for it and can do more with it like later when it's more boring.
That's right. That's like when Vine.
And I think I mentioned the last time that Max and I were on, don't over-decorate your office because if you get fired, you just want one box and you're out of there.
The barber's pole. The moose head, a lot of good individual items in there.
The wet bar. I love that. All right. So, I mean, we started virtually a couple of days ago.
By the way, I just also want to say to everyone out there, you're never getting a second season of anything ever again. So don't worry about it too much.
But oh my God, working on a first season show is so much harder than a show that's been up and running.
I wouldn't know. I've only basically done it.
Yes, you would.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yeah, that's a lie. But there's something fun about working on a first season show because you feel like the plucky underdogs. You're really in it together. And
there's no writer going, we've already done that.
Which we really have annoying. A lot of on Family Guy because that happened.
Season three, done it.
We did that season four. Yeah, so we're excited to start up. We're gung-ho to start up in person. When you guys are listening to this, fans, we will be having our first day in person back at our offices. So that's pretty exciting. I'm psyched to see some of those people we haven't seen in a couple of years in person. I'm psyched to hug Mike D.
Aw. Hug him for me.
That was sarcastic, JC, aww. But that's okay. No, I'm excited to see them all in person. So that's starting up. So that's what it is. We're starting up soon. We're very excited. And Tom G, our Patreon premium guest today, you had something exciting, a movie pitch you want to tell us about?
Yeah, you know, I've been kind of rusty. I haven't worked in almost 2 years and haven't worked with Max at all. And, you know, after we were let go from The Simpsons after 22 years, I said, Max, what should we do next? And he goes, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to become an EMT. Right. So long, Pally. And he zoomed away in his wheelchair.
Oh, no.
I didn't know what I was going to do, but I thought maybe I'd get into the movie business. And I had a successful pitch recently, and it wasn't on Zoom. It was in person. And whoa. I was a little rusty, but I think I have a few tips on how to help do this.
Great. First of all, let's hear.
The night before the pitch, plan your route. You're going to make sure you have a good map or GPS. I've got a Thomas guide, which I've used for 40 years, which is outstanding. I think that's Hollywood's best secret. But, you know, if you're going to someplace like Disney or Warner Brothers, it's easy to go. But a lot of these small movie production companies are in beach communities like Santa Monica, and they're going to require some navigation. So the day of the pitch, give yourself 3 hours to get there, because you never know. You might run out of gas or your car door might fall off again. Remember to bring duct tape. I call duct tape a writer's best friend. Well, I'm actually the only friend now that I don't talk to Max. But, you know, whether you're reattaching your muffler or just, you know, making sure the lid on your crock pot in the car, that's another thing. You want to bring your own lunch because you don't want to be paying Santa Monica restaurant prices. You know?
I'm sorry, did you say your crock pot?
Yeah, okay, you want to make sure the crock pot lid is secure with duct tape, because if you turn a corner and beans are all over the car, it's like, and you don't have time to deal with it because you got to get to your movie meeting. But the thing is, obviously, you don't want to pay Santa Monica restaurant prices. You'd be like, a ham sandwich and a cup of coffee is going to be at least $10 in Santa Monica. Yes, if you're throwing a tomato, you got to take a bank loan. But now, obviously, you don't eat during the pitch, no matter how hungry you are. You don't want to eat, but all of these movie production offices have a waiting area in the front. And they've got their Hollywood reporters, and they've got an outlet. You can plug in your hot plate and eat after your pitch meeting. And it's a chance to even pitch with people waiting to go in. Wardrobe's very important. You don't want to wear any pants with noticeable stains or tears, because the worst thing that could happen is you can have the best pitch in the world, but if after you leave, all they're talking about is, did you notice his pants were held together by safety pins? That does not help.
No, what about duct tape?
Duct tape, yeah, that's good too. But you don't want to have your pants held together by safety pins and they're talking about it, unless your pitch is something like, say, Gina Davis is married and her husband dies and she inherits a safety pin factory. Then that could work for you. But try that. I've got a special shirt. It's a red flannel shirt. Now, if you've ever gotten a Christmas card from me in the last 30 years, you've seen this shirt because I've worn it in every photo. And it's a great shirt. I wear it on special occasions, like a movie pitch. And in fact, I sold my first fax wearing that shirt.
Oh.
So now, because you've left 3 hours early, presumably you've gone to the office a little early, and I always like to bring with me what I call a dop kit.
Yes.
And this is a little bag with a comb and a razor and some tooth powder. And
tooth powder?
The production offices are always in the hallway, and you need a key to get in, but ask for the key. You're there for a meeting, and they're usually on a block of wood.
Do you ask for the key before or after you plug in your hot plate?
You walk in, plug in, go to the front desk. Hi, okay, Tom Gamble here for my meeting. Can I use your bathroom? And they give you this big key that's a lot of fun. It's on a block of wood. And so, you know, go into the washroom, and it wouldn't kill you to just splash a little water under your underarms because, you know, like you might have gotten a flat tire. Like I know, Goldie, you got a flat tire a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And you might have to run the last mile and a half to get to the meeting. And so you leave the dop kit. Don't take it into the meeting with you. That's not necessary. You can leave it in the front desk. Nothing is going to, it's never been stolen. Okay. Now, in the meeting, they're going to ask you, do you want any water or coffee? You say no. This will surprise them. But the fact is, you're here to pitch something. You're excited about your idea. You want to just get in there and do the pitch. Then there's going to be a little small talk from the executives. You're going to say something like, who watched Hill Street Blues last night? And then there's going to be some talk about Hill Street Blues. You don't want that to go too long, but, you know what's on the three major networks. It will behoove any young writer to have a highlighter next to their TV guide. So you don't want that talk to go too long. You're like, I've got an idea that's even better than Hill Street Blues. And they go, oh, I thought you were pitching a movie. Oh, I am a movie. It is a movie. There'll be a little question. So now what sells these days, I can tell you. The star of my movie is a hot young girl. She's diverse. She's sexy. She's funny. She's got diversity up the wazoo. And she works with these two guys at an office. The office, I haven't really figured out. It's maybe like Entertainment Weekly, you know, some magazine that everyone has on their coffee table. But there are these two jokers who work there who I'm calling Baldy and the Snack. Now, they're real jokers. The Snack's real name is Andrew Snackstein. And how he got his name was, he's very skinny, but he's always at his desk eating Triscuits out of a box. And one day, Baldy turns to him, and you guys know how mean whether you work at NASA or Random House or TV show, you know, the office, guys can get kind of mean to each other.
Sure.
And so one day, Baldy turns to Andrew and says, you know, you keep eating those Triscuits, you're going to turn into a Triscuit. And there's a lot of laughing and high-fiving, and I think everybody goes home. But the next day, Andrew comes to his desk, and there's a little nameplate that says the snack on it. And I think production-wise, it's much funnier if it's actually been engraved. But, you know, if the budget only makes you do it handwritten. But you should have me back when talking about writers on the set, about picking battles and stuff. So anyways, let me tell you something about the snack. He's hilarious. He's one of the funniest guys. He can make anyone in the world laugh. Everyone except for one person, his wife. And he's given his wife everything. He's given her a wonderful daughter, a house remodel north of $1 million. All he wants is a giggle in return, a laugh or something. Scenes in his house are going to be very tense. It's going to be sort of like the Hurt Locker, those scenes. Now, Baldy is also very hilarious. It's like he's brilliant. I wrote a little file card to describe him. He's the kind of guy who will read 7 newspapers before breakfast and the back of the cereal box. Whoa. That's kind of a funny little whiskoping. The one quirk about Baldy is every couple of weeks, one of his family member dies.
Oh, no.
But then the snack pulls out his Triscuit box and everything's back together again. Now, like I mentioned, the main character is hot, sexy, diverse. Did I tell you what her name is? It's Bree Velveeta. And everybody calls her BV. Everybody calls her BV. And she keeps a cheese journal, which is something people do. And one day she leaves a cheese journal on the train, and the conductor picks it up and reads it. Dear diary, last night I ate some Gouda. And it sparks memory in the conductor about his grandmama in Switzerland and how she used to feed him Swiss cheese. And our diary is going to be our way into all the different stories. Now, I don't want to tell you too much because my boss, Roberto, at Santa Monica Features would get mad. So I'm not going to tell you more. But at the end of the pitch, they might buy it in the room. They might say they have to think about it. That's the point you go like, you know what? Now I'll take that water. And maybe a coffee, I'll take one of each. And ideally, they'll point you in the direction of the snack room. And this is when not having holes in your pockets really pays off. You can put a few power bars in there or some licorice sticks. And then you spend the rest of the day trying to figure out how you're getting back to Altadena. Hey, does anybody hear a siren?
What? I do. Wait, hold on. Oh.
What is that?
It's Max.
It sounds like an ambulance.
Oh, who could it be?
Max! Max, what are you doing here?
Hey, Tom, why are you telling people I'm not in the business anymore? I'm actually on my way to a production office right now.
Wait, where?
Hang on, I'm headed to Lincoln in Santa Monica.
You mean Santa Monica? Wait, that's where my meeting was.
Wait, hang on, I gotta park this thing. Fun thing about an ambulance, I don't need change for the meter. I'm allowed to just pull over where I want. Okay, hang on.
Wait, you're not going to the first office to the left, are you?
Hang on. Yeah. I'm going in. Hang on. Oh, boy. What a mess. It looks like looks like he killed himself. Hang on. Let me just cut the rope. Wait.
No. It can't be Roberto.
Hang on. He left a note. Let me read this. Dear world, I just bought the worst movie pitch I've ever heard. I'm done. Signed, Roberto. Kind of cute signature. The O's are little hearts.
This can't be the same Roberto. It's like, so does he have like a fancy like $20 haircut? Is he short? Does he have a dark complexion?
Right now his complexion is blue. He's turned blue.
This is terrible. Hey, Max, maybe we can do a script about this.
Tom, my crew does not find this kind of thing very funny. I'm sorry.
Well, if this is a real Roberto, I'm not going to have money to pay for this Patreon premium.
Oh, no. Thing.
Hey, let me call you back. This is my first suicide. I got to figure out how to bag this guy.
Oh, no.
Is that Anne Scene?
And that's how you pitch a movie, guys.
Oh, my goodness.
We should be paying you. I'm going to refund your money for the Patreon premium. That was
awesome.
Amazing.
We may just, and so Max Pross, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Max.
How are you?
Hello.
How was your life without songs?
Max, it was
Tom.
Hell. They were quizzing me about The Simpsons and Seinfeld. It was awful. It's like I told them we're not; those days are over.
He appeared to know nothing about The Simpsons under scrutiny.
Hey, if you want to hear us talk about The Simpsons, we did many, many audio commentaries.
That's true.
That's where you get the mics
from. I can't tell
you
what's going on at The Simpsons now. We haven't been there in a while.
But we're very used to wearing heavy, sweaty headphones like this. Yeah.
So, Max, update us on the EMT training. How's that going?
I recently got my license. It just came in the mail a couple of weeks ago. So I'm looking for events to do. And I haven't done a lot of. If I don't put in enough ambulance time, I'll have to retake the test in a year. So I'm taking it, you know, slow and steady. But
have you stuck a pen in anyone's throat yet?
No. Haven't had to do that.
Believe me, Max doesn't do anything with the pen.
There's Barb number one from Tom G.
Hey, by the way, Max isn't paying for the Patreon premium page, but let's bring him on.
I love that Max is here. And once again, the drum roll for you coming was huge. And then once you got here, like before, Tom wouldn't stop talking and let you get a word in edgewise.
I can't wait to listen to the show. I'm sorry, I was in the waiting room, so I couldn't hear anything.
The whole time.
I feel kind of out of it.
With your crock pot? And your dop kit.
Right.
Max, we're glad to hear that you got your EMT license. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, we're so happy
for
you.
Great job.
They tell them how much it pays.
Oh, it's a completely minimum wage job. The EMT system, which was decimated. Let me tell you something. If you guys at your podcast or at your TV show need a set medic, I know animation doesn't really need medics, but you can get a
You haven't seen our room.
You can get a punch-up guy at EMT prices, which is minimum wage, $15 an hour. And I'm sure Tom will hang around, too. So, you know.
Yeah. Sure.
What also, about the EMT guild? They don't use the rates? Residuals on if you save someone's life, you then get a commission on their future earnings? Or anything?
That should be. That's a great
respirators idea. Down means respirators down.
The EMT.
Union town.
The EMTs, David Goodman, has decided to strike this year. So there are going to be a lot of people dying on the sidewalk.
We're not on strike.
Moving on.
As long as we're
plugging things. You can't package us as part of an ambulance crew.
As long as we're like whoring ourselves out, you know, I look a little bit like Barry Goldwater. If anybody needs Barry Goldwater for a one man show or anything, I'm available.
I pointed that out to you. Maybe you had heard this before, but I pointed that out to you, and you took grave offense at that. And now you've embraced
Barry Goldwater is a hero compared to like what's going on in Arizona these days.
Of course.
I grew up with his granddaughter. You do look like Anna. Him.
I mean, what an unfound gold mine to look like Barry Goldwater in 2022.
Let's spin it into gold.
I mean, I look like a minion. That seems more marketable.
Much more relevant.
Was Tom the only guest today? Like, no Pete Holmes, nobody like that?
I wasn't even a guest.
Tom is now our first Patreon premium member, so he got to sit in and watch the show, and he said many, many times that he wasn't going to interrupt. That worked out. All right. Well, thank you to, first of all, Tom, unbelievable bit about, I mean, not a bit, unbelievable story, should I say. Good advice about pitching a movie. I loved, good luck down in Santa Monica. It sounds like it's the place for you.
All right, so now it's time for the top five, right? Can I stay for the top five?
You can. Yeah. I mean, you can, anyone can stay, Max.
We're actually going to give the Patreon money to Roberto's GoFundMe.
That's right.
I have a favor. Can I leave for the top five? Is it all right?
Yes, Max.
Oh my God,
thank you very much.
Thank
right.
you
yes.
for
lives
sitting on.
Lives to save. You've got lives
thank
to save.
Thank you, Max.
All right. I'm sorry to hear Tom's the only guest. I guess I'll listen this week. I want to kind of hear that. All right. Talk to you guys later.
Thanks.
Bye. Tom, I'll see you tonight.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
I made it sound like I don't see Max, but actually they're coming over for dinner tonight.
Oh, that's nice. That's You're going to bury the hatchet. I think that's classy.
Totally.
All right. Now I think we're finally ready to get to a portion of the show we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
There it is. Now, Goldie, set us up for this week because this was your category.
Yeah, this is top five best legal drugs or medications.
Yeah.
Love it.
So
love it.
I can just get us started.
Joe, unless you want to hold it because, I don't know, I feel like you should be the close. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Goldie.
Number five, I'm going to say it's a childhood favorite, Triaminic.
Oh, what is
would
that?
I have a cocktail that was like Triaminic and rum? Sure. I think it could be a drink mixture.
Yes.
It's so good.
Yeah. Was that a Simpsons? Wasn't that the secret ingredient to.
That's right. In the Moe's
cocktail. In a flaming Moe's.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, when I worked with Tom Davis and he had a sore throat, it was always NyQuil and rum. That was a combination.
Wow.
So great.
Worked out for him.
Number four, Ricola.
Ricola.
Oh, Ricola.
Yeah, don't limit yourself to needing to have a sore throat to enjoy a Ricola.
Yeah.
It's just an all-day treat. Because if you don't have a sore throat, what ends up happening is the menthol gives you an almost like superpower for about 8 minutes.
Yes.
Ah, you're invincible. Ricola.
Great call.
Number three is legal cocaine, a.k.a. nasal spray.
Is that true? I didn't know that.
Just makes you, you get the rush. You get empty airways. You get like a kick of energy.
Yeah, Afrin. There we go.
Number two has saved many a Jew's life. Tums.
Goldie, what do you think about their theme song, though?
Could be the laziest theme song ever created, where they told someone, like, all right, 6 months from now, we're going to launch a big Tums campaign. Here's $1 million, and the person leaves. They come back 5 months later. What do you got? Here it is. Tums, 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 Tums. Tums, 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 Tums. Tums!
But everybody remembers it. That's
they
good.
Do. It's like the Liberty Mutual Insurance, where they just
say
Liberty.
I often say that it, when you're eating Jewish food, the dessert should just be served on a giant tum. We have a scoop of vanilla ice cream on a huge tum.
On a tum with some tum crumbles.
And number one, and I've had them, and this is why baseball players, pro athletes get into so much trouble. There is nothing better than being on steroids. The superhuman power, the workouts.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's great.
You're a bionic, a bionic human.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Tom, would you like to go?
Sure, I can go next. Number five, atorvastatin. It's really great for cholesterol.
Nice. yes, yes.
PreserVision, number four. It's, you take two a day. They're vitamins for your eyes.
Ooh.
Three, real vitamin D3. It's called the sunshine vitamin. It keeps your bones strong. You know, you still need to wear sneakers in the shower because you're still going to fall, but you probably won't break so many bones if you're taking D3. Allegra, it's an allergy medicine. Mm-hmm. I have a very manly allergies. I'm allergic to smelly soaps, smelly candles.
Very manly. Cats.
There you go.
And Allegra doesn't make you sleepy. And number one, I've got a little...
Cod liver oil. It's very good for
it's
you.
Like, it's, yes. Guys, this is really good for to keep you regular. You know, I've got neighborhood kids who come over and they think they're pulling a fast one on me. They give me a brownie lace with egg slacks. They don't realize they're doing me a terrific favor.
Is that bottle newer or older than the dad's energy drink?
No, this is you can get this at your health food store. Cod liver oil. First of all, it's fun to take every morning because it's like you're in the Little Rascals. You take a spoonful. And it's lemon flavored, so it doesn't. Well, I recently came back from Iceland, where everyone drinks cod liver oil.
They drink
like
fermented cod liver oil.
Yeah, so really, this is I can't recommend cod liver oil enough.
That bottle just looks like it's from the Depression. I love it. It's such a great look. He's holding up a bottle of cod liver oil.
Yes.
All right, I'll go ahead. Mine are, if you don't mind, JC, closing it up. Okay.
Yeah.
So number five for me is Sudafed. What I might do if they keep raising interest rates. Hey, everyone, the Johnny jokes are over.
You're going to sue a Fed person?
Sue the Fed. Okay, never mind. Or as Goldie might say, Susan the Fed. Number four, and Goldie, we're in the same area. This is my Tums equivalent is Pepto. It's like Popeye's spinach for Jews. It's just, you know, it really does what it says it does. So
I've never used either of those stuff. What they sell your stomach?
Oh, Pepto Bismol is for when you've got diarrhea, upset stomach, nausea. You know, it's like
it'll make your poop disappear for a couple of days, and it'll be a bizarre dark shade.
Sounds healthy. Oh,
okay. It looks like that. It then
I'm
looks
not
like
gonna start
clay.
Now.
No, don't start now.
No,
I've gone this far without using it.
Yeah, lucky.
Well, you've got cod liver oil. You don't need it.
Yeah, and Tom, also you're a waspy guy. You don't have to worry about the stomach stuff the same way.
I'm not eating the gefilte fish.
Yeah, no, you don't have stomach stuff. You just have madness. That'll be coming. Number three, and I think it might be the same as Triaminic. I called it Children's Dimetap. It was that purple grape flavored cold medicine.
Yes.
Drowsy and delicious, I like to call it. Children's Dimetap. And number two, Advil, the M&Ms of medicine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, they work. It has the appearance of candy. I think they're even sugar coated somehow.
Oh, my friend trying to leave.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Oh, my God.
Aleve are same family. And yeah. Goldie, this might 100%. Set you up for something here. My number one, NyQuil.
We don't want to go down that road.
No, we don't. Goldie and I used to have a bit going back and forth of like a Carson bit, actually, where we would pretend that he would be listing famous. These are other famous quills.
They're famous quills. And when we do this, we get more of a response either way. Some people love the famous quills and others, they detest them with a rage. And so again, here we die, and we've never done a bit two nights in a row, and we're doing it here. These are famous quills.
Yes.
If you're disappointed in someone, you might want to try a little bit of PsyQuil. Yes. PsyQuil.
But if you're taking that quick weekend getaway to Fire Island, you might want a little GuyQuil. GuyQuil. So that went on and on. We did that for
and
years.
Again, we hear that some of you do not like this. but others feel just as passionately the other way. That's a big part of the bit, was explaining why you were doing it, and that you were trying to gauge whether this was very popular or unpopular.
All right, so NyQuil was number one. Okay, JC, what do you got?
Okay, so my version of your Tums and Pepto is charcoal pills. Ooh. So this won't change the chemistry of your stomach, but if you have like a moment of like, oh, that's not good, I just take 2 capsules of charcoal pills, because they use them to remove poison if you've ingested poison. It's the same thing. And it's...
So could you just suck on a charcoal briquette for the same results?
Possibly. But
is that why coal miners are so healthy? They're getting all that charcoal.
Are they? I have charcoal pill bottles like everywhere. They're great. Very useful. Okay, my number four, we have overlap. We call them ibubes in my house, ibuprofen. We those like candy as well.
Like jujubes.
My number three are magnesium supplements. I take 2 capsules at night before I go to bed. Keeps you regular. Just saying, if anybody needs a little help with that. Number two gets a little edgier. Number two, I was talking to Chris Long about this. He helped me remember this. Tussin. Robitussin.
Yeah, sure.
You want a little party before you go to bed?
Drowsy.
Or not? Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that makes me drowsy, I'm a big fan of.
Same. And then my number one, I don't have a prescription, but I've taken this a few times, Xanax.
Yeah.
Mm.
Wow.
How did
we forget Xanax?
I'm scared. Because I just
you
know
might like
with
it
my
too
reaction
much.
To alcohol and everything that like yeah. if I took yeah. one Xanax,
stay away.
I think I would always need a Xanax.
Stay yeah. away.
I will it's, say one yeah. SNL finale after party. Stu and I went to the after party. We don't drink, okay? And everyone is just raging. I had a Xanax pill and I looked at him and I was like, do you want to split this? We're at this party, everyone's like, you know, dancing. And we take the pills and we're in the middle of this dance, sweaty dance floor, literally dancing in halftime, looking at each other like, this is so great.
the world's most relaxing palindrome, Xanax.
Exactly.
That's a great list. And now so for next week's top five, this require always the best lists always require a little explanation. So this is the list for next week. Top five, this might be the best song ever. So okay. I'm not talking about like Let It Be or Yesterday, like these songs that
Ramblin'
we know.
Man?
If you can make a case for it. I'm saying songs that you might not think would be on the top, but for some reason, when you hear them, you think to yourself, this might be the best song ever. So top five of those. There it is. All right. Now, and we're lucky to have Tom G, our Patreon premium fan here live, because he's going to help us end the show as we do every week on a high note.
Is he okay?
That's hilarious, Tom. Thank you.
Sound up.
Yeah. I'll get us started with just a little thing that maybe a lot of you saw, which I thought was great, is It's we're in the midst of the Little League World Series. I've been watching a few of those.
And, the hug?
Yes. And so what happened last week was Texas and Oklahoma were playing each other. And the Texas pitcher hit a kid, an Oklahoma batter, in the head. And the kid was down for a couple minutes, and there were coaches around. You know, it was all very quiet and somber. And then the kid got up, and he was, you know, fine, made his way to first base. Meanwhile, the experience was so distressing to the pitcher who had hit the kid that the pitcher was on the mound crying into his glove. Like, he was very emotional about what he had done. And so the Oklahoma kid came off first base and just stood on the mound hugging this kid and, like, talking to him for, like, 2 minutes. And then the rest of his team came and surrounded him. And it was just – it was such a sweet moment. And it's one of those moments where, obviously, it's what's – sports in its purest form, when you combine it with their kids and the innocence of children. And it just makes you think for – a fleeting moment that we could be okay as a society if we really wanted to. You know, everyone's we're so divided and everyone hates each other, and one side thinks we're right and the other side. But there's a way to achieve common ground, and there's a way to be human with each other in these moments. Wow. And I just thought that kid from Oklahoma in particular just did a great job. So that was my high note.
That's beautiful and very well said. Do you want to go, Goldie, or do you want me to go?
Go ahead.
Okay. My high note this week, you know, I had to choose, but I'm gonna go with this one. I'd like to thank Ross Birkin, who invited me to fill in for Brian McElhaney to co-host with Ross and Rodrigo Garcia Platas a podcast called Biotypical.
Wait, what?
No, it's very different from what we do. It was really fascinating.
Sure it
is. We interviewed a man named Charles Muir. If you haven't heard of him, he is one of the originators of the modern Tantra movement. Oh. So it was, whoa, was it interesting. We learned about, like, tantric, you know, sex.
You could say it on here.
And yoga. And it was really fascinating. I didn't know what I was getting into. And it was amazing. It was really, really insightful.
Yeah.
I bet.
I tend to have tantric sex, but just for 3 minutes because I'm barely moving. But it's just 3 minutes.
The tantrum. It's more like a tantrum.
You know what the best part of sex is? Not coming.
That's what we all want.
I can not come for so long. I'll make you not come for such a long time.
It's going to be great.
It feels like fraud. The longer you're with me, the less you'll come. It'll be great.
You'll love it.
Because I'm so good at sex. All right, I'll go. So Seth MacFarlane has a funny, like, in writer's room bits about this, but it's a very true thing. So I had my physical with my doctor, annual physical, this week. And there's nothing better. The minute after you get a good report, you know that you're healthy. For, like, it can only go downhill from there for the rest of the year, because you're going to start getting all these weird little pains and assume, like, is this the heart attack? Is this the cancer? Whatever. But when you've been scanned and probed and it's like, nope, there's nothing in there and you're fine. Like, that day.
Yes.
Yes.
You know that, like, the day you were born, like, today I'm fine. And so I was able to enjoy that feeling.
Yeah. It's like Johnny Jokes, but stretched over a year. So
yes,
that's like,
yes, you're done with the Johnny Jokes. Yeah. The second, it's like, this is the furthest away from Johnny Jokes I'll ever be. It's like, yes, this is the furthest away from death that is possible for me right now.
Right.
So
that's good. Well, that's congratulations on that clean bill of health.
Yeah. Yes. And as I told you, you know, because I'm approaching 50, that I've now become, sadly, I'm good at getting prostate exams. Like, I used to have some fight in me. I used to resist. I used to be like, ah, whatever. And this time it was like, take all the time you need, man. Like, probe around up there. I'm just staring out the window going, I don't have it in me anymore to have an opinion about this.
Maybe you should listen to that tantric episode.
Yeah, a tantric prostate exam.
Well, what a way to wrap this up. Goldie is healthy. Yes. Tom G, our first Patreon premium
thank
fan.
You, thank
what
you.
A performance.
Thank you so much. So yeah, great. And Tom, let's just say his full name, Tom Gammel. The, yes. Your movie thank pitch. You. And when I asked you before, when you said you were going to talk about a movie pitch, and I said, is it a bit? You said, there might be some jokes in there. It was great.
It was awesome. It was so...
I believe as a Patreon premium, I was supposed to get 5 barbs from Golden.
Oh,
Alley.
No.
We'll refund you.
Yeah, we'll roll them into next episode.
This is
episode.
Why I adamantly fought having a premium. I just don't want to do the obligations affiliated with it.
So, Tom Gammel, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
For sharing
you for
your
me.
Funny stories. Thank you to Goldie and JC for always being awesome. And thank you all for listening. We will talk to you again next week.
Next week! That was fun!
Right now.
Guy Quill.